Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. I wanted to go over a blog post from an individual that I'm not familiar with, but did some great work on this article. And this really goes over what I think is the scam of climate change or trying to get to net zero by 2050. I'm not saying that climate change isn't a problem or dirty air isn't a problem. But what I am saying, and you guys know this well, is that the global elite don't care about the temperature of the ocean. They don't care about baby seals. They don't care about anything other than you taking a cold shower so they can fly around the world in their private jet. That's really what this boils down to. Or peddling influence so they can enrich themselves when it comes to the politicians. And this article is a fantastic example of what happened in Germany when the leader of the quote-unquote Green Party tried to completely dismantle their nuclear program in favor of what? Well, it was all in the name of climate change. It was all in the name of getting rid of that filthy carbon-based energy source. So he basically shut down the nuclear program in favor of importing gas from Russia. And it just turns out that he happens to be very good buddies with none other than Vladimir Putin, and that they put him on the board of Gazprom and all these other energy companies in Russia. The guy that was leading the Green Party in Germany. But by understanding and going through this article, you start to have your eyes opened. It's like the red pill. And then you're able to better filter and really realize why these globally, why the politicians, why the Davos types, the central planners, the authoritarians, why they keep pushing this narrative of climate change so hard in every single one of their speeches. Every single time you hear Klaus talk, he's always saying we need a sustainable future, a sustainable future. Sustainable, sustainable. What that means is they just want to utilize the narrative of climate change to really usurp, not just usurp power and control, but they want to use that as kind of like a carrot in front of the horse, right? That they've got that carrot on the stick, so to speak, where they're saying, if you don't do this X, Y, and Z, then the whole world is going to come to an end in 10 years. So you have to give me the power. You have to give me the control. We have to be able to micromanage your life. We have to be able to determine how we source energy and who controls the energy that we utilize in society. We have to be in charge of that, i.e. Cantillon effect, because if we aren't in charge of that, then the whole world is going to come to an end in 2050. You see how the game works? But let's get into this article that illustrates this extremely well. So this is Germany's Russian gas problem. This is from a gentleman by the name, young gentleman, I believe, by the name of Jack Rains. And this was March 28th, 2022. I originally saw this on Zero Hedge. And his blog, I want to give him full credit here. His blog is youngmoney.co. So you can check out more of his work at youngmoney.co. All right, he starts off with this picture that I used in the thumbnail and a pipeline, obviously, from Russia directly to Germany. And this, of course, is a green pipeline that transports natural gas, right? So he starts with a quote from Greta Thunberg or Thunberg, whatever her name is. And she's saying, "You have stolen my dreams, my childhood with your empty words. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing." Okay. So this is just in fact, this kind of goes back to the last video we did with the Senator Simmons or whatever her name was. And you can tell these people, and what's ironic about what she said is that this disinformation online is whipping people up into an emotional frenzy. But what we can see is, although that may be true in some instances, what's really whipping people up into an emotional frenzy is this narrative that's being pushed by the global elite. I believe they know what they're doing. And so you've got layers here. You've got the people right at the top that are trying to usurp power and control. They understand the game. Then you've got the people below them, maybe the college professors, the people in the media, some of the lower politicians like Senator Simmons. And then you have people who are influential like Greta. they're just buying anything that the global elite serve up. They're not pushing back. They're just, you know, basically opening up their brain and saying, hey, global elite, Klaus, pour whatever you have directly in. There's no filter. I'm just going to take everything you say in good faith and as though it's written in stone. And I think the global elite take advantage of that. So although Greta may have good intentions, they are just completely using her, right? They don't have good intentions. They're just trying to manipulate her to do their bidding. Same thing with Senator Simmons, or I'm sure I'm probably forgetting her name, but you guys know the gal I was talking about in the last video. I think to a certain degree, I think the media is in bed with them, but some of the media, the journalists, you know, they were just brought up with this worldview and they've never questioned it. And this goes back to Stalin and Lenin. They used the US media the exact same way. And you see it playing out right in front of our own eyes here in 2022. But so the point here is this whole movement towards climate change has had a few effects. This goes back to the last video again, in the way that the intentions of the senator, she believes, as long as it's good intentions, that's all that matters. The intentions are going to equal the results in the long run. But what she doesn't understand, and what Greta doesn't understand, is that regardless of how good your intentions are, the results of, let's say, the politicians proactively moving us toward quote-unquote renewable energy, the results are going to be completely different than the intentions. And I think the people at the top realize that. And they just don't want anyone else to know, because they don't want the people that they're influencing or manipulating to know that they're being manipulated. So he starts after the quote saying, climate change, the existential crisis that has filled every Gen Zer with dread since they entered grade school. Politicians, CEOs, and other powerful figures fly around private jets to summits around the world each year and condemn the fossil fuel industry as vile plague that must be destroyed at all costs. So he tells this story about when he was traveling around the world doing his blog, he went into this museum in Germany where they talk all about green energy, and he brought up the nuclear, and he says, hey, where's the section on nuclear? And I say, oh, well, we don't have that here. That's not sustainable. And then he says, oh really? Here's him quoting himself. Oh, really? That's interesting, because, and then he says he bites his tongue because he realizes that he's just, you know, he might as well talk to the wall. He's not going to get anywhere with this person. So then he starts doing some research. He says he goes back to his hostel and starts doing some homework here. And he sees that this is a chart, by the way, of German energy prices. And that is parabolic, as you would imagine. So he kind of asks the question, well, how did Germany get into this place to be, or how did they get here? And he goes on to say that in March, their energy or their electricity prices shot up to a record 3,632. Now, I'm not sure if that's euros per something. I'm not sure what it is. But bottom line is it's up 62% from just 3 months ago. Solar panels, wind, meals sound great when times are good and energy prices are low, and there's not a care in the world. However, I can assure you one thing. When winter sets in, supply chains wrecked, war is waging in Eastern Europe. He goes on to quote, I'm not sure if this was who said this, but a climate crisis is the least of your worries. I mean, climate change is the least of Germany's worries right now. And tears at the UN podium aren't going to keep your family warm. I don't know who said that, but that's very, very true. It's one thing. It's, you know, we're talking a lot today about how what happens when fantasy and narrative actually meets reality. So he says, how did Germany get here? It goes back, starts in the 1950s, that the nuclear dilemma. So German nuclear power that started in the 1950s. And then he said the protests against this are as old as the energy source itself. And they started back in the 60s. They got really strong in the 1970s. And then in 1980, they formed a new party called the Greens. And this was in Germany. This was founded on Central European nation. The Greens emerged from a wave of new social movements, including environmentalism, anti-war, anti-nuclear power. And this makes sense because this is in 1980. And you guys know by watching my videos that the Club of Rome was set up in 1968, basically Malthusians. and the World Economic Forum set up in 1971, 1972. The paper that I'm sure heavily influenced these people in the Green Party, at least the useful idiots. Now you'll see that, again, I think the people at the top, they don't care about this. They weren't influenced. The only thing they care about is power, control, and money. But the people underneath them and kind of the plebs in society and maybe the people that work for them, some of the lower politicians, not the people at top, the lower politicians, they buy this hook, line, and sinker. And they kind of, and the people at the top use that as leverage to, again, manipulate those people that they need to manipulate to serve their purposes. And we're going to illustrate, or this gentleman is a gentleman that writes this youngmoney.co blog. He illustrates this beautifully. So my point there is this paper that was written by the Club of Rome in 1972 called Limits to Growth, I'm sure influenced a lot of the people in this political party and probably a lot of the people in the German society. I don't think it's a coincidence that that paper came out in 72 and this party was formed in 1980, because this is, I think if they had like an opening document that stated their objectives when the Green Party was formed in 1980, I'll bet you it reads pretty much verbatim to what the Club of Rome was saying. So since the party's inception, the Greens have been concerned with immediate halt of construction of operation of all nuclear power stations. So you guys know, first and foremost, why that's a problem, because we need energy to continue to grow with the population. So if you're a big fan of renewable energy, I think that's great, but you have to understand that you can't just want renewable energy to replace fossil fuels. It has to replace and grow exponentially. The alternative, whether you like it or not, is hundreds of millions of people, if not billions of people, dying. Period. End of story. So if you just had, and let me make sure I'm clear, if you just had green energy replace the existing energy and still had the population growth and energy didn't increase at the same rate, you would kill hundreds of millions of people. And the standard of living globally would decrease massively. And this is what these types of people don't like to wrestle with. These are the difficult questions. Again, goes back to Thomas Sowell. They like to see a world where there's solutions instead of a world where there are only alternatives. One is a fantasy world, one is reality. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. So it goes on to say how this movement really gained steam, this anti-nuclear movement with Chernobyl and whatnot. And then he goes through and highlights this chart of what has happened with energy since, it's like 1990, all the way to 2020. Now, they have done a good job here increasing the amount of wind, but I would note that this is really started in about 2000. So what happened from 1980 to 2000? And I'd also point out that according to some of the statistics he references later, that hydro actually is more environmentally unfriendly than the new forms of nuclear energy. So you can see how much of a percentage. Now, I wish he would have showed the total energy usage, because I would bet that although coal was, let's say, 60%, and today it is, what, call it 25%, 30%, something like that, I would assume that the amount, the aggregate total, not as a percentage, but the aggregate total of coal used today is probably even greater than it was back in 1990. That would be an interesting statistic, because again, we have to remember that I'm sure Germany's population is substantially larger. And therefore, if you want the standard of living to be maintained or increase, the access to energy needs to increase at the exact same rate. So his point in this chart is to show that when they really started to reduce the amount of coal, or excuse me, reduce the amount of nuclear, the way they did that is pretty much to increase wind, that is true, and solar, but also increase the amount of natural gas. And not just increase the amount of natural gas, but change their source of natural gas. And this is where you start taking the red pill. And here's where he is referencing hydro is a little bit more dangerous than, I mean, they're all extremely low. But hydro, I'm sorry, so the cleanest, so that would be the safest. Okay. Oh, and it's a lot cleaner as well. So nuclear is safer and cleaner than hydropower. Actually, okay, I didn't realize this. According to Our World in Data, if I'm reading this correctly, and it looks like I am here, that nuclear is, as far as the emission of greenhouse gases, nuclear emits less greenhouse gas than solar and wind. It's the least. It's the greenest of the green. Yet the Green Party in Germany is trying to ban the use, or was, and probably still is. So that's kind of a head scratcher there. So this here he talks about how they, in an effort to quote unquote go green, they've increased their use of natural gas by decreasing nuclear from 19% to 17% of total electricity generated since 2000. And he points out that gas produces 150 times more emissions than nuclear. But then he starts talking about what I think is really fascinating. There are no coincidences. So this must have been a miscalculation. So he's talking about them decreasing nuclear and adding the natural gas, when this makes no sense, when it's the Green Party that's actually pushing for this. And he says this must have been a miscalculation, right? Kind of saying that as a rhetorical question. Germany must have underestimated how long it would take to implement other renewable energy sources. And then, you know, or underestimated the energy needs in 20 years. But he says most likely not. Then he circles back to the German chancellor in 2000, since 2017. See, let's circle back to Germany's chancellor in year 2000. Since 2017, Gerhard Schroeder, the man who led the charge to shut down nuclear in the name of renewable energy, has been the chairman of Russian energy company Rosneft. you just can't make this stuff up, can you? So the guy that was leading the charge, in the politician, that was leading the charge in Germany to basically ban nuclear energy, just happens to sit on the board of Russian energy company Rosneft. And it looks like, according to this article, has sat on the board for since 2000. So then in February of 2022, just weeks before Russia invaded Ukraine, Schroeder, the man who led the charge to shut down nuclear, was named, he was named to the board of Gazprom. So now he's on Rosneft for 17 years. And just before Russia invades Ukraine, he's named to the board of Gazprom as well. Shocker, isn't it? And I think the shocking thing is people actually trust these politicians. the Gretas of the world, the some people that have good intentions in the media, Senator Simons or whatever her name was, she actually trusts these political figures. It's just how you've got to purposely not do any research to just, it's just the blue pill. It's just they it makes them sleep well at night if they just continue to take the blue pill. Just ignore that red pill with all of your power, with all of your strength, with all of your might, and just continue to live in the fantasy world where ignorance is bliss. So then he goes on to point out that not only did this guy get named to the board of Gazprom, but it's the Gazprom that owns the Nord Stream pipeline. And they built the pipeline in 2005. Here is the leader of the Green Party in Germany, the guy that shut down or was really pushing the shutdown of all the nuclear plants in favor of what? Russian natural gas. But yet Russian natural gas is 150 times worse for the environment than nuclear. See how the game's played? So then he points out a few other tidbits of information that are probably relevant. We know back in 2014 that Russia was willing to influence foreign energy policy. Okay, basically the same way. And his assertion is that Putin wanted to keep Europe reliant on Russian gas. So basically, if you're not following the story here, what Putin does, or the combination of the two of them, is they say, hey, you be in charge of the Green Party and you push this narrative that nuclear is bad and just keep and doing it in the name of climate change and get the whole population to believe you as though you're some sort of saint or some sort of hero for the earth. And really what we'll do is we'll get people to support their own demise. And then what we'll do is we'll break, you got to think of the gas company or Putin looks at nuclear in Germany as a competitor. It's just a competitor against your business. So let's get this guy in politics. Let's pay him $1 billion or whatever, 100 million. And let's just have him run for green person or green, you know, the guy was probably in charge already. And then Putin goes to him and says, hey, we'll pay you $100 million if you keep pushing and keep or ban the use of nuclear in favor of our gas energy, natural gas energy, and just do it in the name of climate change. And the guy says, done. Sign me up, my friend. In fact, why don't you just put me on the board of Gazprom? Why don't you just put me on the board of Rosneft? Why don't you just put me on the board of Lukoil, you know, whatever it is. It's just, I mean, how do people not see through this? It's absolutely staggering. And, you know, there's so much blame to go around. I mean, it's hard for me to blame the Russian energy companies because they're doing exactly what Google does. They're doing exactly what any of these corporations do, these giant corporations that gain political favor. It's corporatism. Is all it is. This is not free market capitalism. It's the opposite of free market capitalism. Where these cronies, these corporatists, and basically fascists in the government, and this is, you know, why Klaus always talks about the public-private partnership. Now, this is what he's referring to. It's the politicians manipulating the public to vote for XYZ policy, which really is serving the XYZ corporation. And that corporation just gives a kickback to the politician that's pulling the strings in the first place. I mean, where most people get hung up, like your friend and family member, Fred, is what's most obvious, or at surface level, it seems like, okay, well, what we need to do is we need to make this illegal. We need to make corporatism illegal. We need the government to come in and solve a problem of big government. What they don't understand is the solution is not more government. That's the problem. The solution is less government. So let's go back to the United States in 1913, before the Federal Reserve was set up. The government accounted for about 5% of GDP. That was government spending. So the private sector was 95% of GDP. So if you would have gone to the politicians back then, they wouldn't have had the power to do this. They wouldn't have had the influence. So to eliminate all the lobbyists to eliminate all the corporations, to eliminate all the political favors that they can benefit from that create this moat around their business to where other people can't compete with them, and to have, you know, so, and to motivate them to have those politicians in the back pocket. Government has to have the power in the first place. If the federal government didn't have any power other than just to basically defend the borders, and going back to the Constitution, if the government was constrained, truly constrained by the Constitution, the way it was set up, none of this, you wouldn't have any of this, at least not in the United States, because corporations wouldn't be seeking out politicians because those politicians wouldn't have any power. The politicians wouldn't benefit them in any way. Therefore, the only way they could take market share was by outcompeting their competitors. How do they outcompete their competitors? They provide a better service or product at a cheaper price. You see, now what happens with the sales forces and these global corporations and whatnot is the way they outcompete their competitors is just through political pull. The way they outcompete their competitors is just by being buddy with Klaus, because they know he has the influence of the other politicians. The politicians influence the people, and therefore that can create that they can implement policies that will make it almost impossible for businesses in the future to compete with them. The corporations get bigger and bigger and bigger. Go back to the Cerveza sickness, when the lockdowns. Is it any surprise that Amazon just happened to be a, or any of these businesses, right? These huge corporations just happened to be essential. And the mom and pop business or the mid-sized business, oh, well, no, that's not essential. No, not essential. That's what they're doing, guys. That's the game that's being played behind the scenes. And this article, again, just illustrates that perfectly. And here is where this is probably the main takeaway for the story. Data is no match for powerful stories. So we as human beings, we don't really do well with data and facts. We do really well with stories. So this is the way the politicians manipulate us. This is the way the media manipulates us. They tell us these stories about how the world is going to end by this, and how the ice cap. They tell us these personal stories about how this person was, you know, living in the coastal waters and now his house is underwater or something like that, right? They tell you these stories. This is how they whip us up into like an emotional frenzy. I mean, you see them do it every single day with Russia, Ukraine. They're telling us these stories that, you know, I remember I knew we were going down the propaganda path the first time, or not the first time, but when Russia first invaded Ukraine, and all the media was reporting that the Russian soldier guys were just going through Tinder and trying to hook up with hot chicks in Ukraine. I'm like, okay, there we go. Turn on the propaganda machine. Everyone needs to hate Russians, and everyone needs to think that their military are just a bunch of, you know, skirt chasing buffoons. And let's tell them these stories, these powerful stories that will shape opinion, instead of just giving them facts and data. Because again, and this is something that we need to learn from as rebel capitalists. We need to understand that we are prone to this type of influence, let's say, or at the very least, we are susceptible to this type of influence. So whenever you see something, even if you agree with it, you need to say, are they presenting just a personal story that I agree with? That's getting me excited or getting me mad or getting me fearful? Or are they giving me facts and data? And are they giving me multiple sides of the story, right? This is in today's day and age, this is paramount. So he says, stories help the Green Party outlaw nuclear energy in Germany, despite it being the safest and cleanest form of energy in the world. There you go. Stories over facts and data. So I think if that's, you know, if you take that away from this article, and then you start to better understand the relationship between the politicians and these global elite that are not just that, but the corporations as well, and you realize that the corporations are doing this to create a monopoly. They're the big corporations benefit heavily from an increased regulatory environment. So the more you can raise minimum wage, the more you can increase the hurdles that have to be, or the bureaucracy, the red tape that is there for competitors, the more that you place priority on an ESG score, as an example, the more that you can reduce your competition moving forward, the more you can create a monopoly. The more you can create a monopoly, the more you can leverage the power that the government has in these politicians and get them in your back pocket. And then you have this relationship between the two, which again, is basically fascism or corporatism, but they do it in the name of whatever narrative is popular. So if it's climate change or, you know, net zero by 2050, this is all just marketing. It's all just marketing in order to facilitate corporatism. And it was the exact same thing with the Cerveza sickness, right? Let's just create a narrative and get the public to buy into it. And then let's create policy that makes every single person get the medicine. And I wonder if Pfizer benefits from that. Would Pfizer benefit from it being law that every single person on the planet get their medicine? I think the answer is yes, right? So I'm not saying that's the only thing that's happening behind the scenes is just corporate greed, because that is nothing new, right? But and by the way, what keeps the corporate greed in check? That would be free market capitalism. It is not the politicians. It is not government power. That does the opposite of that creates the opposite environment, where instead of keeping the corporations in check, it gives them more and more and more power and control. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.